Hello and welcome to episode 70 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
And this is, I suppose, well, it's our last episode of 2013.
2014's on its way.
Yes, great.
I've been seeing wild enthusiasm.
I've seen a lot of mixed feelings towards 2013 on Twitter the past day. People go, it's been a crap year. Hated it. But it's fine, because you know what we're going to talk about? We're going to talk about our fave films, video games, and TV shows from 2013.
I mean, we're actually going to try and be positive?
We're going to try and be positive. Negativity could still sneak in, but we're going to try and be positive. We cannot make any guarantees about avoiding spoilers. We're going to try and gloss over, you know, key plot points, like maybe what happened in certain series that have ended dramatically or whatever. We will try and gloss around, dance around things.
Especially the more recent ones.
If somehow any spoilers do manage to sneak in, we're going to endeavour to perhaps, you know, just kind of point out when things might have happened in the show notes on nerdassemble.co.uk if there's anything you may be worried about. Yeah, maybe check there first before listening any further. But for now, fave TV of 2013?
Yay.
Go, Paul.
Well, I'm going to go Misfits.
Which is also mine. And I believe Retroid, which you like in the Misfits?
I did like Misfits, yes. I certainly liked some of the characters more than others. Mm. Rudy was a late favourite.
Although he was an early since he's come in, I've always liked Rudy.
Well, I liked him, but I just sat there. I just sat there cross arm going, I don't like you. You're just a drop-in replacement for the rude one.
I liked him.
So yeah. Was it Nathan?
Yes.
I thought, oh, it's a bit obvious that they're just going to have someone who, you know, constantly just, you know, puts his foot in it at every opportunity on purpose. Mm. It's like, oh no, I like you. In fact, I think I ended up preferring him by the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, technically, he's... isn't he the only one of the original that's technically still alive? Theoretically.
Well, isn't there Kelly?
Oh, yes. Yeah, oh, yes. That's true. Unfortunately, Kelly had to be written out of the show after some off-show antics. Left a bad taste in producers' mouths.
And I think it was the ultimate irony that didn't she actually get community service to do?
Yes.
On that. So it'll be basically a bit like doing your job, only you don't get paid for it and there's no cameras following you around.
So hang on, what did she do?
I don't really want to discuss it because there was obviously a case of and stuff. And it's a downer. Right. And I don't know where the progression beyond obviously punishment, the whole thing's kind of go through. Basically what I'm saying is I don't want to mess around with British libel laws, do you?
No, although I'll just ask my good friend Roger Google, owner of Google.
Yes, you do that and have a private read. But no, Misfits was an interesting series this year because it was the final season that was on, and it was obviously because is it Overman his surname? Is it Howard?
Oh, right, the creator.
Yeah, the creator. I mean, he's obviously started doing work for the BBC, and it doesn't feel like the show had come to its natural conclusion beyond, obviously, people finishing community service.
It felt like it was the start of something new, but they didn't announce, like, any spin-off series or anything.
Unless, of course, they're going to do what they did with The Inbetweeners, which is just make a movie or two.
Yeah, that could work.
That would be kind of
so,
nice.
So that they can actually have some money.
Yeah. Oh, I can't remember. Did the Americans try to make Misfits? I'm pretty sure they tried to. And they given up on the idea.
It's very possible. I mean, there's very few comedy series, or, you know, general series, that they take from Britain and remake for their own, and it always ends up not working. I think it's mostly because of the British humour is it doesn't really translate very well if it's not British people making the humour, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen the American version of The Inbetweeners, and it's absolutely terrible.
Did you ever see the pilot episode of Red Dwarf in America?
Yes.
I've seen, I think, the first couple of minutes.
I've seen bits of that.
And no, I was not impressed.
No, it was diabolical. And it was on this as a special feature on one of the video box sets I got.
All right.
Yeah, I wanted a refund. That wasn't a special feature. That was the worst special feature you could ever include. What the
I suppose calling it a terrible feature would...
Okay, I'm just gonna circle this back to Misfits a moment, because so you had Howard Overman, I'm hoping I've got his name right. He wrote some of the episodes this series, and he previously written like all episodes, I think, for the previous seasons. But this was the first season where somebody else. There was another guy writing some of the episodes as well, like doing the odd one, because I think his work for Misfits kind of overlapped with what he was doing with Atlantis at the BBC.
Mm. Oh dear.
So yeah. But I felt, because last, the fourth series was a bit, not because people had switched over or their run on the show had ended, but it didn't have perhaps as much punch as it had the previous series. But this series, the final, it seems like it was really picking it up, and it was just so freaking annoying that it was the last one. Not just because of just, it was still left quite open-ended, but just because the writing did genuinely seem better.
It seemed to actually have an objective.
Yeah.
And an idea of what to do with some of the characters and their powers rather than just kind of doing things.
They actually, like the previous ones did. They actually had like the overarching, there was proper overarching plot for the entire season.
Yeah.
Which really, really worked. And now it's all gone. But I want to talk about a more positive TV series experience. Somebody throw a show that they liked this year at me. Not literally.
Oh, I'll have to pick up my DVD then.
Throw it down the internet.
My highlight for the year for TV would have been the 50th anniversary of Doctor Who. It wasn't perfect, but I really enjoyed it.
Mm. Uh-oh.
I think Grumpy Cat has woken up.
Yeah,
I think it should have been longer.
It should have been longer, and that would probably have worked a lot better. It was the same issue I had with the Christmas episode.
Yeah, the Christmas episode was too
where
short.
Where you had so much going on that nothing seemed to be done properly.
No, and for the Christmas for the 50th anniversary, although I really enjoyed it. John Hurt, for me, was just underused.
Yes.
Well, he was only in it for a few minutes, really, screen time.
But other than that, I thought it was really cool. I love how they've got onto the whole thing that he might have actually saved Gallifrey. So the whole series has got a new... It's sort of been turned around, so he's got a new objective. Mm. And I really like that. But like with the Christmas special, yeah, it was just too short. I mean, the Christmas special, I was left a little bit... I was left wanting more, if that makes sense. And Matt Smith did really well. He really performed well in the Christmas special.
He did.
But they tried to get us on the emotional side with him, with I can't even remember her name now.
Jenna Coleman.
Jenna Coleman. Yeah. Carla, is it? No.
Carla? No. It's...
My mind's everywhere.
No. Thinking Oswald. No. Clara Oswald.
Yeah. Clara Oswald, there you go.
The annoying one.
For Clara, when one of the things that got me was when she was abandoned by the Doctor the first time and she went back 300 years and he'd actually aged, that sort of hit an emotional response for me. But then they seemed to take away from it by doing the whole thing again 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
I didn't see the point of that. What?
Meanwhile, I had to explain to... He shall remain nameless, though he will never probably listen to this podcast. But I had to explain to someone why it took 300 years for the TARDIS to get back from the Christmas special. I was like, it's because she was on the outside, you know, slowing it down. It's extra drag, man. Extra drag.
You know, but
yes,
I mean,
she is a drag.
I think the other thing that got me, though, was the for the regeneration was Matt Smith had a really nice speech, but then it was all over. It wasn't like David Tennant's. Where you had the emotional strings pulled right to the end, where you went off and met everybody else and said goodbye and you know what I mean?
Mm.
Matt Smith was over in like 5 seconds, then Peter Capaldi was there, and I was like, well, hang on.
That was too quick.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, I mean, when it was the end of Tenet, it was the end of an era, literally. You know, they'd kind of changed hands with the, you know, kind of from, was it Russell T Davies to Moffat? You know, he got into completely, like, different, you know, kind of scenario and whatnot. And whereas this one, that, as far as I'm aware, they're going to keep Clara Oswald, and they can't revisit Amy and Rory properly because they've already said that. It's kind of time-locked.
No, but even the Christopher Eccleston's regeneration was a little bit longer because you had all the special effects.
They were obviously running out of time. I think what struck me about both the special and the 50th anniversary and the Christmas one, and it just is something that just seems to evade them as a thing they could do. If they're not happy with having 90 minutes all together in one point on the telly, why not a two-parter?
Yeah.
Two-parters, you know. I'm never into, especially with the Christmas special, why don't you just do a two-parter? You could have, you know, have one part on Christmas Day, one part on Boxing Day, and you're pretty much secure most of the viewing figures for Christmas telly.
People would be happy with that.
Definitely. I mean, it was...
I'd feel like, you know, licensed pairs were, you know, getting their money's worth.
I think the problem for me as well is if you've read my piece on Hex, you know I love the Big Finish audiobooks.
Mm.
And the following day, on Boxing Day, I was driving down to Norfolk, and that's when I tend to listen to them. And I actually listened to a story that I'd been waiting to listen to, which involved the Seventh Doctor, Ace, and a new companion. Mm. And they actually managed to pull my emotional strings that much that I actually had a tear streaming down my eye at the end of it.
Aww.
And I was just like, well, hang on, that's what I should have been doing at the end of Matt Smith's. Why? Do you know what I mean? There was no real emotional thing there. They tied up all the loose ends with the silence and everything really nicely.
Yeah,
definitely. And they managed to close pretty much all of Matt Smith's storylines. But then one of them surely will be carrying on with Peter Capaldi anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I liked quite a few of those, you know, little bits.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, what the silence were.
Yeah.
And how the tear started off in the first place, and, you know, things like that.
Mm.
I mean, I saw one review of it. I won't name the site, but they were saying, about the Time Lords causing the tears. It's like, no. You need to actually go back and rewatch the episode. It's like, you know, I'm not someone who will, you know, sit and note down every single reference in every episode.
Yeah.
Just so I can trip them up. But it's like, it was made quite clear that it was the Time Lords were just using the tear.
Yeah.
As, you know, the area of least resistance to try and get through.
Yeah, exactly. So it's going to be interesting. But the 50th anniversary for me was the highlight this year. Possibly because of all the hype going around it as well. But I just really enjoyed it. Apart from it just wasn't too long. Long enough.
Anybody got any other TV series this year that they loved? Anybody? Ooh. Any other takers?
Well, I've been doing the box set binging.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a series that I managed to stop myself from watching pretty much up until it was finished. And then we could just sit and watch it. And it was Breaking Bad.
Yes.
And, we saw the first few episodes and then thought, well, you know, this needs, you know, compressed watching. This needs box set watching. So we'll wait until, you know, it's done. So we waited a few years and, you know, watched other things. And then, of course, there was the whole thing with the series finally coming to an end this year. So that was when it's like, right, we'll jump back on it. And I'm glad I did, because it's one of the best series I've seen that's managed. See, yes, it's episodic, but it didn't really have standalone episodes. They were all part of the one arc of Walter White and what he's prepared to do. And when it comes down to the final season, it's why he's doing it as well. That comes into question. Now, I managed to avoid spoilers for it, so I'm not going to say, you know, anything about what happens in the final season.
Okay.
Only that it's very well done. It does have some twists and turns. It's not convoluted, and the end is not a disappointment.
that makes me want to watch it more, because Paul and I are currently stuck on series three. I say stuck on, we sort of started watching it, lost momentum, and this was prior to everyone suddenly going Breaking Bad mad this past year.
Breaking Bad mad.
I put that down to the box set watching. Because I can just imagine how much torture it would have been to watch it an episode a week. We were watching it, the final season, we were watching about three episodes a night.
Wow.
It does make me wonder.
Yeah.
Because this year has seen a lot of series end, hasn't it, really?
But yeah. I must say a lot of series end. I mean, one of the good things, and this isn't... maybe I should count it as one of my favourite TV moments of this year, because it became available. House of Cards.
Ah, right.
On Netflix.
Yes.
I'm trying to think, did that start this year, or was that start last year? I'm really confused now. Or was it last
year? I think they were promoing it the end of last year, but...
Yeah, it came out
Seeing as it's Netflix...
Yeah.
I'd say it would still qualify as 2013.
Yeah. So House of Cards, obviously the American adaptation of it, which Netflix helped produce.
Have you watched the UK one, the original series?
I haven't. I know of it, and obviously of the books that it's all based on.
You must watch the UK one. Netflix does have it. And I have a sort of a man crush on Francis Urquhart in the original series, because he's just such a bastard. And also such a Tory.
Yeah, well, I mean, that obviously, that was still kind of coming through a bit.
Yeah.
In the Kevin Smith situation. Just Kevin Smith. Kevin Spacey. God. Sort of betrayal going on.
That would be a different film.
I would still have to watch that, actually.
Kevin Smith does political drama.
I'm just thinking Silent Bob politically scheming his way into the presidency.
That would be cool.
He could be the interpreter.
He could.
The sign language guy, not knowing what to say.
No. I'm going to move us on now to our favourite video game to 2013.
I was going to admit something.
What?
I watched and actually quite enjoyed my Mad Fat Diary.
There's nothing wrong.
Not that geeky, but yeah, I think it's the teenage girl in me.
What?
Not literally.
That was just operating all the levers.
I'm staying quiet.
Was that? That's another channel. Well, essentially Channel 4 series. But was it on Just E4? Did they put on Channel 4 as well?
Just E4, I believe.
And obviously, yeah. 4AD. Yeah. The second series of that starting scene, isn't it?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to move us on to video games now.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay.
So does nobody else have any embarrassing?
No.
Okay. Whatever.
What was your favorite video game of this year?
My favorite video game.
Yeah.
Was Mario.
Which Mario?
Mario 3D Land World thing.
You mean the thing for the Wii U?
Yes.
That had all the cat costumes.
It's been about 12.
This past year's been maybe a tiny bit saturated for Mario games across. Handheld and console.
Tiny bit saturated.
But Mario 3D World does look awesome.
It is awesome.
Yeah.
Explain why.
Because it's awesome. every single level seems to be doing something new. It's every single level is quite different from every other level. And even though, you get certain bits which are repeated, like, say, for example, jumping on that dinosaur to kind of ride it to the end and whatnot, they still manage to seem quite fresh. It seems like it's a different environment, almost.
Meanwhile, I'm stuck there playing The Last of Us, and I feel like I'm repeating myself again and again and again. But just to say, it's obvious The Last of Us is not my favourite game of 2013. But is there anything else you'd like to tell us about Mario? Other than the fact that, what did you think of the multiplayer when you attempted to play it?
The multiplayer, I really enjoyed, but I think it had kind of obviously similar problems to, was it New Super Mario Bros. Wii U? So where it's like if you're trying to, you know, do a serious game and, you know, basically being kind of a bit completionist and, you know, to get to the goal, then multiplayer probably shouldn't be for you. But if you're actually planning on actually having fun, that sounds quite bad, actually, because I had quite fun just playing by myself. I'll rephrase that.
That big screen makes a difference.
Yeah. And once again...
Also, touch control.
And once... Oh, God. Once again, the teenage girl and me decided to go for Peach most of the time because of the floating power. And then Rosalina once I completed enough of the game.
Okay.
Okay.
I think people know way too much about me on this.
Yeah. It's fine.
Yep. And if we don't, we're making it up in our heads.
Oh, God.
Cookie, what was your favourite game of...
My favourite game, I'd have to say, is Pokemon Y.
I think that's a fair choice.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's the refreshed visuals helped a lot. Catching Pokemon is just as addictive as ever have been. And I really enjoyed the online battles.
I haven't actually tried the online battles yet.
I didn't have much choice the first time because I just got a message saying, oh, somebody's challenged you. Do you want to fight? And I pressed A and I was like, oh, hang on.
Did you win or lose?
I lost terribly, to be honest with you, because he had like level 106,000 Mega Evolution.
This is what's put me off kind of doing Charizard. It's like, I'm not very far into the game still, mostly because I keep being distracted by other things, and it's just like, no, you could forget dueling with me for nothing. It's fine.
I'm not actually that far into the game. That's what I love about it. I can just pick it up, lose myself for a few hours, put it down, and come back to it again. To be honest, it's just one of those games that I will just pick up, play a little bit, and then put down. It's just perfect in that way, and actually capturing the Pokemon and getting the new Mega Evolution Stones. There's just so much, a little bit more diversity to it than the older ones.
It doesn't feel like they tried to add too many, and there's been like a nice reuse of like existing Pokemon this time around.
There is, yeah. And then you've got the World Trade as well, where you can literally just bung your Pokemon into the internet and just have random Pokemon suddenly appear in your collection, which is quite amusing.
Random.
Yeah, it's random. That's always good. We like surprises sometimes.
There's perhaps one thing that I don't like about the game.
Mm-hmm.
The continued existence of berries. I always feel like I'm gonna play the game enough successive times that the berries issue won't be a problem, or I'll be able to reach back to places where I've planted berries and handle them and make sure that I still have berries, and it never happens.
It's it's one of those things that you either love or hate, I suppose, about the berries. I mean, if I'm being honest, I've never really taken much. I normally just buy loads of potions because the money seems to be way easy on it, to get money on it. So I just tend to buy potions and just leave the berries.
What do you think of the change in visual direction for the game?
Really like it, definitely. I think it's a lot more grown up. Mm. It's a lot more, you know, sort of in today's... It's a lot more artistic, in my opinion, I suppose. And it's... I like how you can customise your character now with baseball caps, T-shirts and stuff, which seems like... It's a big step forward for that game, I suppose, in a way. It should have been done ages ago. It's just really nice how they've done it.
Mr. Retroid, which has been your favourite game of this year?
Ooh, now, after some umming and ahhing, it's probably still going to be Bioshock Infinite.
Do tell.
Well, I know it seems to have... split people far more than the original Bioshock did. And in a little bit of trivia, Bioshock 2 is apparently not canon.
Really?
What?
Yeah, it was... well, Mr. Levine didn't particularly like the idea of another team doing a completely different story in the Bioshock universe. That's why in the DLC for Bioshock Infinite, which, you know, as people may or may not be aware of.
That's Burial at Sea, isn't it?
Yeah. Burial at Sea. I've just played part one. Part two is next year.
Does it retcon
sometime.
Things?
No. I'm trying not to spoiler it.
Okay.
Fair enough.
It fits in perfectly well with the ideas and especially the ending of Bioshock Infinite. With the constant variables, parallel universes, things that always happen and things that can change.
Yeah.
So, yeah, up until playing the Burial at Sea DLC, I wasn't entirely sure how it was going to be Booker and Elizabeth in Rapture.
Yeah.
Seeing as Rapture is about 50... Yeah, it's about 50 years after Bioshock Infinite. But yeah, it does make actual perfect sense when you play it. And it is all rounded up. So part one doesn't so much leave you on a... cliffhanger for it.
Yeah.
I'll be very interested in seeing what they do with Burial at Sea Part 2, seeing as it's Burial at Sea Part 2, whether it's going to be another Rapture story or not. But, I really liked the game to the extent I have now played the game twice this year.
I think I've played it at least twice, if not two and a bit times.
Yeah. But I haven't had to, go back and redo bits. So I've just, gone through and...
Are you asking why I played it so many times?
Well, yeah, because I know it's not your favourite.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious.
Yeah, if you drop by my website, drowninginmultimedia.co.uk...
I'm going to pull the plug.
I did do an extensive write-up of what I thought of the game. It was post-mortem, essentially, rather than an actual review about all the things that I did and didn't enjoy and why, and stuff that I found was a bit iffy and things that I think could have been improved on and stuff like that. It's a bit of a long read, but if you search Bioshock Infinite on my site, you'll find it. Okay, so you guys have had your favourite game. My favourite game, and this will make it the third Nintendo-led title.
Oh, bloody hell.
For this podcast, Animal Crossing New Leaf.
Again.
I bet there's a bunch of people out there that are going to listen to this and going, they call themselves gamers.
Sure,
I actually really enjoyed my time in Animal Crossing. I haven't had enough time to actually go back and spend
out of us. I think Bioshock Infinite is probably the most hardcore of the favourite titles this year.
If there's one thing that can, one term that can use to be, to describe me, it's hardcore.
Why have I liked Animal Crossing New Leaf so much? Bear in mind, I played Wild World extensively. So I've never played the original. I've played Wild World extensively, and I tried playing City Folk, but I couldn't really get into it. What about New Leaf, though, has made me become quite addicted to it. I think it's the fact that you're the mayor this time. That, for me, has made a huge difference. Like, having just that degree of control over shaping the town. Yeah. So, you don't have to choose to build public works projects, but it is nice to actually... do then. I've got to a stage now where I'm finally building like the police station, getting everyone to save bells for it. And I've finally been asked by Blathers, can you please let Brewster, the coffee shop owner, move in, and can we help fund him having this like awesome coffee shop? And obviously before these were just things that would just be available to you eventually in the previous games. And now it's like, no, you actually, help decide where it's going to be, and sometimes what it looks like as well. Like, you can decide what the police station will look like. And the fact that you've got, the island minigames. I haven't played them that much, because I've actually been having enough time in, the main town.
Yeah.
To find things to do. It's just felt like it was a very good progression. The only thing I've had qualms with is the fact that it's still really awkward to get people to visit your town. Like, the Dream Suite's a bit naff. Because it's you can visit somebody's town, but you can't you can't take anything away from it, and you just basically just see it. You literally, your character's just dreaming it.
Which going to nick stuff.
Which is a bit poor, really.
Yeah. So say, for instance, if they had a fruit that you don't have and you would kind of obviously like to have so that you can grow it in your town, you obviously can't do anything about it. And it's obviously because the friend code system is still not that friendly. You can't obviously you need to be connected with somebody either locally or via friend code, you exchange friend codes and be all registered up with everything. And then be both playing the game at the same time to visit each other and then interact in virtual towns.
I was being very politely silent on the really there's a problem with online in the Nintendo game.
Well, I was actually quite surprised because the other day I was actually looking through like the friend code kind of stuff and whatnot, and I actually found that I was able to check the profiles of people that I'd previously played with and actually send them friend requests as well.
This is on Wii U.
This is on Wii U, so it's improving.
It's just slow.
And yeah, I don't think people quite appreciate the fact that, you know, Nintendo are trying to do stuff, even if they are trying to make it also as kid friendly as possible.
I appreciate the fact that they are still about 8 years behind everyone else on it.
Yeah.
Considering you could easily do things like that on the 360 when it launched. But yeah, that's Nintendo in the please for God's sake, just accept that you have to do these things, and it's okay to learn from other people. It's okay to learn from other platforms. It's okay, we understand.
You say that, but just, I mean, in the end, it's like how many games have actually benefited from, you know, online? I mean, yes, there are some, you know, there are plenty of games out there that have, but by the same token, the types of games that, you know, haven't, and they've basically just stuck it in anyway.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I am not one with the, a game has to have multiplayer. No, it doesn't. But the games that should have multiplayer do benefit a lot from it. And I was just thinking, you know, with Animal Crossing and multiplayer, I probably mentioned this before, but I got the GameCube version imported from the US, and me and my wife played that hell of a lot. Now, one of the advantages of it was, well, an advantage, disadvantage, each town required a full memory card.
Yeah.
Now, if you could get, you know, cheap memory cards, if you had the memory cards, that wasn't a problem, because what we'd do is I had a memory card with my town on. She had a memory card with her town on. And what you could do is if you booted the game up and the memory card, which was in slot one, was, you know, the hometown. That was the one it loaded from. And you could then travel to the town in slot two. So we'd boot it up. And, you know, I'd boot up, you know, in my town, and I'd say, oh, right, you know, I want to get on the train, and it would be, okay, do you want to go to the next town? Yes. So, you know, go there, and it would be, you know, I'd drop money off and fruit that, you know, I had, and I'd harvest some fruit that she had that I hadn't got, and take it home. And that was a perfect way to do it. And it just seems to be that every version they've done since then, they've completely missed the point of being able to visit other people's towns not online.
Well, you can do a local visit, but then me being the kind of person in that I live in a rural area.
Yeah.
If I'm on the train, I'll get, you know, street pass. So I have at least got street pass Animal Crossing towns that I've encountered. And, you know, I can visit that and obviously get some items added to my catalogue, though not fruit, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's kind of like we're still not actually visiting each other, you know. It's just kind of annoying.
It just seems to be a little bit more irritating than it should be. So, I mean, we've got Animal Crossing on 3DS, and I do really like it, but I hate the fact that it's locked. You know, that's your cart with your save and your town. And it's just, that was one of the things I liked about the GameCube version.
Okay. One thing I need to ask, though, that this is 2030, is that are there any games for next year that anyone's actually looking forward to specifically? Because I was trying
Watch Dogs.
Watch Dogs.
Smash Bros. And Mario Kart.
Weirdly, say I'm looking forward
to Metroid. I'm say nothing.
No, you can if you want. I'm not going to judge. I'm reasonably kind of looking forward to Titanfall.
Yes, Titanfall as well.
Which is odd because I'm not really one for multiplayer, but I was really interested in playing it at the Eurogamer Expo. That was a big surprise. I queued to play that in a, yeah, okay, yeah, whatever. I'll see what this is like. And came away going, oh, actually, that's quite good. But yeah. It's not the only one I'm looking forward to. For a start, I'm looking forward to Jeff Minter's is it TKX is calling it? I can't remember. But his Vita game.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that. And there's that, not Assassin's Creed, what's it called? The Movement or something?
Oh, The Division.
Is that the one where it's like 1886?
Is that with the PS4, is it?
Yeah.
No, that's... I can't remember what it's called now. That was one of the titles they announced at the launch, wasn't it?
Yeah, it. I think it's from one of the original creators of Assassin's Creed.
Okay.
Which looked
really... The Order, it could be The Order or something?
Yeah, I think it might be The Order. Because it's... you've got sort of... it is, as you say, so in 1886, very steampunkish by the looks of the visuals and just really nice and...
Yes.
Artistic.
And the new Tom Clancy.
Which is...
The Division. That's okay. The Division.
Okay.
Yeah, that looked interesting. Yeah. Very nice looking engine as well.
Meanwhile, I just want to see more about the new Uncharted as well.
Meanwhile, I'm not really looking forward to anything games next year. No,
that's why you brought this up, isn't it?
I'm keeping an eye on things, but I'm prepared to be...
Disappointed.
Underwhelmed. Yeah.
One thing I'm... also looking forward to, if they ever announce it for releasing this on these shores, is Monster Hunter 4.
Yeah.
Yay! With online.
I'm not like super hyped, but I'm maybe a tiny bit intrigued by the Elder Scrolls Online, and I will inevitably, due to receiving a certain Christmas present this year, hopefully get my hands on the HD remakes for Fantasy X and X-2.
Cool.
Because
I wonder if they'll run at the right speed this time.
That would be nice, and not have the horrible because it was the screen ratio was ridiculous.
Well, not only was the screen ratio was wrong because they put on big borders, but also because they hadn't quite worked out the PS2 screen RAM. It wasn't full screen anyway on NTSC. So, you know, the PAL borders just made it worse.
Come to think of it, didn't it stutter from time to time, like when doing like special moves? Or,
yeah, and some of the cutscenes, I think, might have.
Because,
cutscenes were fine.
We all have to say that, you know, one of the things that, you know, the Final Fantasy games would really benefit from, I mean, you know, massively benefit from, would be everything taking 17 to 20% longer to do. That, yeah, because that would really do it. And Jesus.
Okay, I'm going to move us on now finally to our favourite films of 2013. Starting with Mr. Paul.
Yeah, I did really quite enjoy Now You See Me, which stars Jesse Eisenberg, Woody Harrelson, Isla Fisher... the guy that plays Bruce Banner.
Mark Ruffalo.
That's the one. Mark Ruffalo.
I was going to say, which Bruce Banner, because there's been so many of it.
Bill Baxby.
But yeah, I was really impressed with it. I wasn't sure what to make of it when I kind of went in. Quite like Woody Harrelson, quite like Jesse Eisenberg, quite like Isla Fisher. And yeah, I was like, well, I'll go and see it. And it really, really worked.
It was different. It stuck out in your mind because it was really different, and you had to be watching really closely to actually be able to follow it properly. And it was, I really liked the characters in it as well, especially Woody Harrelson. He was awesome.
Yeah, In a way, it's a film about coming together as well.
Yeah.
So.
I spent a lot of watching it, comparing it with the what's the one with Christian Bale?
It's not The Illusionist. It's it's
the word for the kind of reveal or something, wasn't it?
God darn it.
It's kind of like the payoff, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I can't remember the film title.
There's a technical term for it, but...
The Prestige.
That's the one, The Prestige.
I kept comparing it with The Prestige because obviously there's twisty things going on.
Only less Wolverine and less Batman.
Yes.
Yes.
As you do.
There were some really good effects in it, and it kind of had this weird balance between like fantasy and reality as well. The Now You See Me.
Yeah.
Which is quite weird. I felt like it was almost toying with a degree of magical realism. Because it was like, it's set in our world, but yet there is this hint that there is actual magic behind the magic. And that was quite nice.
It was really nicely written, wasn't it? It was, considering how many action films we've had this year and superhero movies, I think it was a refreshing pace as well. It was a sort of a change from what I've become accustomed to for the last year and a half.
There was a somewhat high glut of comic book movies and action films this year.
Yes.
Oh gosh. Cookie, was there anything else you liked this year? I mean, I know you just said there seemed to be a lot of comic book movies, but...
Now You See Me is the one that instantly sprung to mind because it just blew me away. I wasn't expecting great things from it, but it looked really interesting and it was just captivating. The other two films, I'll have to admit, I really enjoyed were the Wolverine and Iron Man 3.
Okay, do you want to talk about Iron Man 3?
Iron Man 3, it was just a real sort of put your foot up, sit back, enjoy the film, and it's one of those action films where you didn't really have to think too much about it, I suppose.
It's a Christmas movie.
Yeah, it's
a Christmas movie. Yeah, I mean, it was a nice take on the Mandarin as well. Well, not to say take.
Yeah.
It was a nice little twist to the Mandarin, should I say. With Ben Kingsley. No spoilers. And the introduction of the centipedes that he's now seen in Marvel Agents Shield. That was quite cool.
It was
I had no idea there was any crossover there. Although
yeah,
that there is crossover.
And of course, you got Robert Downey Jr., who's just a class actor. To be fair, his interpretation of Tony Stark is just awesome.
I liked that.
He is brilliant in the part.
He is, yeah.
I liked how they were sort of handling the idea that he had PTSD.
Hmm. Yes.
From the events of the Avengers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense. Like, other than obviously the people who've been trained to deal with the horrors of humanity, i.e., Hawkeye and Black Widow. He was like, even despite the suit, like one of the most human characters that was in Avengers.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because like Banner, like with Hulk, is like he's just, you know, just
angry
and hulked out and doesn't, you know, everything's fuzzy for him.
Yeah.
And then Captain America, well, he had to deal with World War II, even though a lot of it was spent entertaining. He saw some nasty stuff, you know, and lived through the horrors of that. Meanwhile, you got Tony there, and while he may have had, you know, spent some time in a terrorist cave, he was still, you know, he's had some horrific stuff, but he's not had it on the same scale.
No, it's like, more thrust upon him, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, and it's always, and it's never been quite that, like, the world is in danger. It's more his world that's been in danger, whereas this, it was just kind of like, with the Avengers, he was just like, oh my god, everybody's at risk. Oh, you know, I can't deal with this.
Well, it's not just that, but it's finding out that not only is there other life in the universe, but it knows where you are and it really fucking doesn't like you. You know, it's like, how do you defend against an enemy that could be
so
anywhere?
What we've tried to say is that the way Iron Man 3 dealt with the character's sort of like ability to digest all this. It was a really nice piece of characterization.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't really get that with Batman.
No.
I was just going to say, with the difference between the two characters, because obviously, you know, well, to me, obviously, Iron Man is, you know, Marvel's answer. He's the, you know, the rich playboy with a secret identity. Oh, you know, not that secret. Hmm. You know, past the point. But Batman was kind of born out of trauma, whereas Iron Man wasn't.
Not the same kind of trauma.
He's not the same kind of trauma, and so he isn't quite as he's also a different kind of screwed up to Batman.
Yeah.
I mean, Batman is screwed up by the trauma.
So, I mean, it's
more sort of the danger in the first couple of films, and the Avengers to a degree. He's the danger seeker, isn't he? He's wanting to jump into danger. He's wanting to push himself to the limits, and he's like
he's a genius, adrenaline junkie. He knows he can do these things. So he wants to do these things, and he's smart enough to be able to build it.
But then obviously the Avengers brings it home. What can actually be happening in the real world, and they deal with it really nicely, and that helps with the relationship with Pepper as well. Potts, in my opinion, you know, I found that relationship generating quite nicely as well, especially when it looked like she was gone.
Yeah, don't say any more than that.
Nope.
I was gonna say, just go back to the Batman Iron Man comparison moment. Really, it was Batman, it was like psychological trauma. Iron Man was physiological trauma, if you think about it, because obviously Batman's whole case with his parents and the fact that he wasn't physically harmed, it was the psychological trauma from that. Iron Man, pretty much any incarnation of him, shrapnel ends up in his chest.
Yep.
And it's more of a physiological issue that he's kind of got to surmount, basically. I was good because you mentioned the Wolverine, so I want to talk about the Wolverine. I really love Iron Man 3, and Get Glee tells me that I've watched it quite a few times this year. I really, really liked The Wolverine because it was the first superhero movie I'd watched in a while which wasn't about the end of the world. It wasn't really about somebody trying to take over the world, which was actually quite refreshing.
But it still had a sense of... a sense of risk about it.
Yeah.
There were still stakes.
Exactly.
But they felt like really well managed personal stakes for the character. More so than obviously had been conveyed in Wolverine Origins.
And if you're gonna be watching Wolverine anytime in the near future, stay until the end.
Of the credits.
Yes.
For pity's sake.
Definitely.
Oh, that was funny, because we saw Anchorman 2 today. You should stay to the end as well for that. Go watch all the credits.
Is it a worthy sequel?
It is a worthy sequel. However, I will forever, once I get this on like DVD or Blu-ray, or so, I will be fast-forwarding or skipping a particular scene because the cringing it made me do was just so painful. It didn't necessarily add anything to the plot, so I think I can happily skip it because the physical pain it induced, let alone psychological, was quite immense.
I'm curious now.
It gets trailered in the trailer. If you thought in the trailer it was looking a bit iffy, it's worse in the film.
Okay.
Oh man. But anyway, The Wolverine, I was really enjoying it. I felt like it was just nice to see the character treated better after what happened in Origins.
Yeah.
As it was like, oh God, thank goodness they remembered how to deal with Wolverine. Because obviously you'd had like X-Men First Class before that, and while obviously there was kind of different people involved there, it showed that really X-Men characters can be something a bit less kind of, I don't want to say over the top, they can. There were subtleties involved in X-Men First Class from a sort of characterization point of view and just the way the plot slowly developed, which kind of did find their way into the Wolverine, and I liked that.
That's the thing. I think with the X-Men films, the kind of original trilogy and whatnot, it was more about them and their powers. Whereas First Class, it was kind of examining them as, you know, humans, as it were.
And Wolverine kind of, basically I liked it. And it's not just because of the amount of, you know, sort of semi-dressed Hugh Jackman again wandering around our screens.
Of course. I have to say that with the Wolverine, I was really impressed with how they dealt with the characters like Mariko. They were quite faithful to the original comic book versions.
Because I finally got round to, after seeing it, this year, I read the comics that it kind of comes from, the stuff that was illustrated by, was it Frank Miller?
Yeah.
That it was written by, was it Thingy Clement? Something or other, I think. But yeah, that was interesting. Like, just what they'd adapted from that set of comics. Just seeing it for once kind of actually brought to screen.
Yeah, it was done really nicely, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Can I just quickly mention, because this year I did actually quite like quite a few different things. I know a lot of people have said that they absolutely hate it, but I quite liked Kick-Ass 2. And the Americans had it before us quite significantly. But this year released Wreck-It Ralph, and I really love that film.
Wreck-It Ralph was ace. I watched that on Christmas Eve.
I do want to see that. I've seen little clips and little screenshots. And so I want to see that just because of the little references.
It's actually quite refreshing having two of the main characters that aren't actually meant to fall in love. It's actually the secondary characters that do.
That does wear very bloody thin after a while.
But having the main characters but fall in love again.
Yeah, because it's, oh, right, that's a story again, is it? Jesus.
And I did enjoy Wreck-It Ralph, and other than seeing it, I also watched it on my birthday whilst eating Skips-flavoured cake. Was actually layered with each layer was a flavour of Skip. Skills. Why am I saying Skips?
Oh, cool.
It's too late. Too Christmas. Too much Christmas. Skittles flavoured cake. And each layer was a different flavour of Skittles. It was just insane. And watching Wreck-It Ralph and eating that cake, and you consider all the sort of the Candyland, sort of like with the racing game, and it's just like, it feels like I'm eating this game right now.
I was going to say, it's been on a right sugar high at that point.
Oh yeah.
Pink elephants and everything.
Everything.
And isn't the Fix-It Felix?
Fix-It Felix Jr.
Yeah, isn't he voiced by the guy that plays, is it Kenneth in 30 Rock? Do you know what I mean?
I don't know who you mean.
I think his voice was John Wiley or John.
It's the kind of junior one that always hangs around with like a tie and really good at poker and is like a really really smiley face and
I can't remember 30 Rock that
okay,
well.
Think of Fix-It Felix Jr.'s voice.
Oh, you mean the guy that's the tour guide and general dog's body?
Yes.
Okay, now I remember. Yes, he did really well with that, actually.
Wasn't it Sarah Silverman that did Penelope? Vanellope.
And then what's it from the shooting game was...
What's it from the shooting game? Oh.
She was Sue Sylvester from Glee.
Yes.
Yeah, she's been in loads of stuff, including a couple of Apatow films.
Yeah. She's quite amusing, to be fair.
Yeah.
I think we've actually come to the end of all our favourite things from 2013. Unless there's any films next year people want to say they're looking forward to?
Days of Future Past, is that still...?
Yes, Days of Future Past, X-Men.
Okay, good.
Yay! Captain America, Winter Soldier.
I'm trying to think now. There's like tumbleweeds in my head.
I'm blank there.
I suppose...
I'm sure there are, but...
I think it is X-Men, Days of...
Future past.
For me next year. I think that's...
And Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't hate the remake or the reboot. I didn't hate it. It didn't perhaps inspire me as much as the first Maguire one, but it's fine. It's fine. But no, I think Days of Future Past, I feel like that could be...
The one to watch.
Yeah.
Ooh, can I just do another honourable mention?
Okay.
It's not the end of the world, it's The World's End.
Mm.
That one was actually pretty good, pretty cool.
It was.
Which is another one I've yet to see.
It's okay, Retroid.
Oh dear.
It's okay.
In 2014, I'll be doing the best films of 2013.
So what were your favourite films of 2012?
Oh, bugger if I can think of any now. was Hunger Games 2012?
It might be 2012, might be 2011. I'm not 100% sure.
That would just be perfect if it was. Yeah. I have seen films, but it's when they're actually... made, you know, pinning them down on that and actually bringing them to mind on the spot is, yeah, that's not going to happen right now.
Okay. Oh, do you know what? None of us have mentioned Man of Steel.
That's true, we haven't.
I want to see it, but I haven't. Another one on the pile for next year.
Okay, well, I think that is really all we've got time for this final episode of 2013. Yay! I think.
Happy New Year.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes, Happy New Year, dear listeners.
Have a nice new number and foisted upon crappy calendar.
and don't forget that we changed our calendar something like, was it the system, like, was it 300 years ago or 200 and a bit? Changed our entire calendar system.
Yep.
It's great.
It's obviously casting a stone that.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, we do hope you do have a genuinely nice New Year. So it's goodbye from...
It's goodnight from me, Paul Wood. I'm Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
And it's goodnight from me, Paul, a.k.a. OneArmed_Cookie on Twitter. And you can find me lurking around the GameJar.com.
And it's goodnight from me, Paul Blewett, and my Twitter is just Paul Blewett.
And it's goodnight from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter at EK6891. You can also visit my website, drowninginmultimedia.co.uk. You can find Nerds Assemble, though, over at www.nerdassemble.co.uk. We're also available on iTunes. We're on Twitter at Nerds Podcast. Plus, we're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. Don't forget to visit hexdimension.com, which will be slowly kicking back into gear. Next week. It's just, you know, Christmas and all.
Let's see if we can make 2014 the year of the nerd.
Really?
Why not?
It's ours anyway, they just don't realise it.
Every time we fix their computers. Every time we tell them how to use their smartphone. Every time we show them how to download books onto their Kindle. The nerds are taking over.
No, we never tell them how to do all the things.
Exactly.
Well, as if they'd listen. We're nerds.
Yeah.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.